the program, since it's going to be somewhat abbreviated if we don't have the budget committee presentation tonight. There you go, Steve.
Thank you, Chair. Let's see. Tony, are you queuing up the slides? All right. So as Chair Smith said, I'm Vahi Brown. I am the Deputy Director of Housing and Community Development, the Housing Division of Health, Housing, and Human Services. I'll wait for my slides to get started, but I'm going to provide an update on the work the county is undertaking and give you an update on the state of the art with respect to ending homelessness in Clackamas County and investing in developing affordable housing for working families and lower-income folks in the community that benefit from being able to afford the places that they live. So a lot of good news to share, a lot of developments to provide some updates on. I'll try not to talk on and on. I do have some notes by way of brevity to keep you from wandering.
You want to try this?
Is it going in
there? Just a little bit.
Is this thing on? Yes.
I don't know.
Well, I might be doing this without visual aids. I suppose that's possible.
That looks like the rug.
Welcome to our world.
I believe in technology.
And this thing will do my slides. All right. Thank you, Tony. Let's check this work. Yeah, it does. Okay, so as I said, I'm with Health, Housing, and Human Services, also known as H3S. This is how we refer to it in the county. And I work with Housing and Community Development, the housing part of the puzzle of Health, Housing, and Human Services. We have six divisions, also Social Services, the Public Health Division, the Behavioral Health Division, Health Clinics, and Housing and Community Development, and Children, Family, and Community Connections. Housing and Community Development includes the Housing Authority, and we administer the funds that the county receives to fund our homelessness response efforts and all of the homelessness response programs that the county administers are in my division. So I'm going to start with an update on the progress to implement the Metro Affordable Housing Bond and set some goals related to building affordable housing with that funding and give you an update on where we're at with those goals. The goal set in 2021 by the Board of County Commissioners with the development of affordable housing units in Clackamas County was for 1,500 affordable new homes to be developed by 2025. That was the goal set in 2021. We are on track today with units that are built with the ground broken or in the pipeline to develop 1,527 units of affordable housing with the bond dollars. So we are on track to exceed the goal set in 21 by the Board of County Commissioners. These are affordable housing projects currently underway or nearing the initiation of construction. Orange markers are projects that have Metro Affordable Housing Bond funds in them. The blue ones are county projects that do not have Metro bond funding. So I'm going to talk a little about some of the goals related to the bond. The Metro Affordable Housing Bond was passed by voters in the region in 2018. Clackamas County receives 21.3% of the total $650-some million that are raised by that bond. That's about $116 million. I have my math wrong. There's less than $600 million. Anyway, Clackamas County gets $116 million from the bond to develop and achieve those goals. And the Metro established some goals within our unit goals that I'm going to talk through. First of all, this is the overall goal, the number of units that were our target for our county to develop with the bond was 812 total units. Overall, among those, we had some sub goals, among these 812 units. So half of them, 406, needed to meet the needs of families. So these needed to be two bedroom or larger. And 40% of the overall units needed to be affordable to extremely low income families. And that's a housing and urban development term extremely low income means households that make less than 30% of the area median income, or AMI. 30% of AMI for a family of four is about $33,000 a year. So for a family of four that makes $33,000 a year or less, for a unit to be affordable, the rent needs to be extremely low, because the affordable rent available to a household with that income is about $400 to $500 a month. So these are deeply subsidized units. Also, we needed to create a number of units for middle-income households earning 61 to 80% of area median income. So at 51% of area median income, that's about $55,000 a year for a family of four. 80% of area median income in Clackamas County is about $90,000 a year for a family of four.
So AMI is regional to Clackamas County. It's not Clackamas, Multnomah, Washington combined?
I believe actually the AMI is the Portland metropolitan region. It includes our three metro counties and Vancouver, and the county that Vancouver is within.
Thank you.
Yes. Here's the progress to date. So the total production underway of using the Metro Affordable Housing Bond is 885 units. The deeply affordable, the production goal for the very affordable at very low income, the 333, we are on track at 366 units. The family size unit goal was 406. If you remember that slide two slides ago, we're on track to develop 508. And the orange units are in pre-construction, so these are deals that have already been approved. Yellow are complete, and the orange in the middle are underway at the moment. So there's a lot of new affordable housing coming online in the next year or so in Clackamas County. So just to recap that, 812 units was the goal with the bond, and we are on track to develop 885 units. So a significant, a success with respect to our bond goals. Fuller Station, and we'll see a short film in a moment about Fuller Station Apartments. 100 family units in this development. It is now 100% leased. This is up and running. Services are provided at Fuller Station. We have a supportive housing services funded community-based organization partner that provides supportive services to a number of the households at Fuller Station who are being served at the extremely low income level. They're coming into this housing out of homelessness. They were experiencing lengthy periods of homelessness before they were housed here, and so they have ongoing supportive services provided to them on site.
Could you please describe what the services are that are available at each of the different facilities, please?
Sure. Yeah. The at Fuller Station Apartments. So with most of the of these buildings, actually all of the bond funded buildings, there will be resident services provided to all of the residents. So this is not case management and not direct service, navigation. So it's lighter than that, but it's support with folks who may have challenges with, responding to a notice from the property management company that you haven't paid your utility bill. That's an issue. And so resident services is like, do you need some support? Can we offer you some help? Is there something that we can do to manage this issue? So it's intended to ensure that people are successful in their housing and the problem solved. And then for folks who are assigned supportive services, it's available to them. It's not mandatory, but if someone is coming out of homelessness and is placed in one of these units, they are, given the opportunity to avail themselves of case management services. That's a case manager that works directly with that family, does needs assessment work, develops a plan related to their goals, their individual service plan goals for how they're going to remain successful in housing. What all does that household need to be successful? And so, and that can be many things. And so those services can look like brokering relationships with physical health care, behavioral health care, employment reintegration, that kind of thing.
Thank you.
And this is the video about Fuller Station.
The Board of Commissioners had a goal to create 1,500 units by the year 2025. We are almost there. With the opening of this Fuller Station, we'll help us realize that goal. 100 units in this solicitation, 75 units are for low-income households, 45 units are set aside for supportive housing services measures, and we'll talk about wraparound services for the people who need them. The medical housing bonds to try to eliminate so I never had my home success like process, but now I say about myself, I will come uncomfortable. When I come home, I know my superior, building a security. And so that really has a big thing. And it's always saying about a policy challenge. Getting behind and being different is distress. It's like a stress that's a lot of them, which I don't have. I'm very fortunate about that. With the job I have, with the bills that I have, I'm not very angry for it. But I have my own. And I want to give back. By then, I provide a foster parent for teenagers without a
any chance of doing that again without the music?
Absolutely.
I really couldn't hear what anybody was saying.
The opening facility, which is very pivotal to end homelessness in Clackamas County. Clackamas County Board of Commissioners had a goal to create 1,500 housing units by the year 2025. We are almost there. With the opening of this floor station will help us realize that goal. 100 units in this floor station, 75 units are for low income. However, 25 units are set aside for supportive housing services measure that will offer wraparound services for the people who need them most. This was Clackamas County's effort through the Metro Housing Bonds to try to eliminate and stop homelessness in its tracks.
You know, I never had my own, always had my husband's. But now I say, I'm by myself, I want my own. I'm comfortable. When I come home, I know I'm secure, the building is security. And so that really makes a big difference, being safe. And it always be safe for my foster child as well. Getting behind in bills and rent, this distress is like a stress that's upon you in which I don't have. And I'm very fortunate about that. With the job I have and with the bills that I have, I counted up everything when I can afford it. I can have my own. It's peaceful. And I want to give back by being a provider, a foster parent for teenagers with developmental disabilities.
Oh, yes, it will. Perfect. Right. Thank you, Tony. So that's the bond update. Yes, Valerie.
Are those furnished apartments?
Yes, in many cases, but not always. So some apartments are furnished. Some projects, they do propose furnishing units, others don't. With units at extremely low income, units that serve households with extremely low income, we do provide furnishings. The county does through our contract providers.
Are these fully occupied then?
Boulder Station is, yes. Yeah. 100% leased. Going to transition from the bond now to the work of ending homelessness directly through the implementation of the Supportive Housing Services Measure. So the Supportive Housing Services are the suite of services being implemented in the Tri-County region, including here in Clackamas County, that are funded by the measure passed in 2020 by voters in the three counties living in the metro region. 21.3% of the tax collections of the measure, just like the Affordable Housing Bond, come to Clackamas County to fund our services. We began receiving funds from the tax in July of 2021 and kicked off our local program in that at that time, a local implementation plan that guides the work of the implementation of the measure was developed from the summer of 2020 into spring of 2021, and that plan was approved by our board just prior to starting the receiving of funds. It's broad, so the Support Housing Services funding is very flexible. It can be used for a broad array of services and interventions to end homelessness. Many of those things are listed here. Case management, which I mentioned in response to Mr. Cibula. Rental assistance, housing navigation and placement services. This is helping someone who's experiencing homelessness who's receiving rent assistance find an available apartment in the community and help them get a lease there. Eviction prevention, so with folks who are at very low and very low income who are at risk of losing their housing, we can help folks retain their housing. We can also fund shelter, transitional housing, as well as street outreach and the wraparound services that also come with the rent assistance and what we call permanent supportive housing. The funding needs to be used according to this distribution by the measure, at least for the first 3 years, where 75% of the funds must be devoted to serving those who are what's called population A in the language of the measure, people who have long histories of experiencing homelessness and have one or more disabling conditions, as well as being extremely low income. So these are households that are at 30% or below of AMI, have long histories of homelessness, have one or more disabling conditions. 25% of the funds can be used what's called population B in the measure, which is folks who are at risk of experiencing homelessness. In our local plan goals, I don't have them all listed. When Holly helped put this together, she reminded us of a film called Death by PowerPoint and how not to put a group to sleep with a bunch of text. So we hopefully avoided death by PowerPoint. So the local plan goals, I have them here. This is a lot of text for a slide. But things that are guiding our use of these dollars locally in the plan. Our goal is to establish and expand culturally specific services, something we historically lacked in Clackamas County, to expand the wraparound services that are needed to kind of create those permanent supportive housing successes, to really increase all types of outreach. This is something that historically had been missing in Clackamas County. When I came to work at Health, Housing, and Human Services years ago, we had a staff person at Social Services who did outreach to veterans experiencing homelessness. That was our entire outreach capacity. Was David Denny, he's since retired. Now we have many, many agencies engaged in street outreach in that really deliberate and careful work of identifying folks in the community who are homeless, developing relationship, building trust with them and connecting them to resources. So we have, that was a goal that we established in the plan to expand existing programs that were high performing, to convert vouchers that were time limited. So we had housing vouchers from the federal government and locally and from the state that were, in one instance, from a local hospital. Kaiser invested in a regional voucher program that was 1 year in duration called Metro 300 to convert those time-limited vouchers into more long-term rental support and to increase internal capacity, really to build out the team at my division that does this work. So with the funded programs since the launch of SHS in 2021, we have, you know, a lot of success to celebrate in Clackamas County. We've seen year over year, 2 years in a row, a reduction in the numbers of people counted in the point in time count in January by federal law. We, as recipients of federal funding to respond to homelessness, we must conduct a street count of people experiencing homelessness in the January year. This year, we conducted a count. As we did last year. Last year's count was a 49% reduction in the last from the count that was conducted prior to 2022, which was in 2019. We didn't conduct a count in 2020 or 2021 because of COVID. And in 2023, this January, we conducted a count and the numbers were down 31% over the previous year. So since we've launched these programs, we've seen year over year, 2 years in a row, a significant reduction in the numbers of people experiencing homelessness. And why is because we have, these are historic investments. Clackamas County has never seen this kind of growth in programs in a human services area. We have 6 new agencies to the county that are providing services. We have 7 culturally specific programs. That was In 2020 and 2019, there were 0 culturally specific programs. Now we have 7. And we have many new and expanded programs and services like street outreach. I mentioned we had Dave Denny in the past. Now we have many, many partners in the community. We have new transitional housing programs with partners that are hotels and motels in the community where folks can kind of be safely off the streets until they get connected to permanent housing. As I mentioned, outreach and engagement. This is now a robust program area in Clackamas County with a lot of development. I'm sorry, Mark, do you have a question? No, okay. We have eviction prevention programming. There was a lot of funding in the COVID years from the federal government to the state to help folks not lose their apartments because they lost their jobs due to COVID. COVID, you know, had mass layoffs and folks were receiving a lot of rent assistance during that time. That has all dried up. It's no longer available in the community. So we are continuing eviction prevention programs in Clackamas County using supportive housing services funding. We have short-term rental assistance for folks who are at risk of losing their housing and just need a little bit of support until they have overcome the hurdle in their lives at the moment. Peer support services. This is a kind of a best practice, evidence-based best practice in human services. Folks that have been there know what someone is going through and are often best equipped to deliver services. And so we do invest in peers as deliverers of these services and programs. And just in the first year, 284 people were served. Safety off the streets. This is the Clackamas County Veterans Village in the picture. That is now funded with supportive housing services dollars, but also we have 139 units of transitional and emergency shelter programming funded now with supportive housing services dollars. These are located, our shelter and transitional housing programs are here. These include severe weather shelters that provide safety off the streets during extreme cold, extreme heat, and during wildfires when air quality is dangerous or hazardous to health. Permanent supportive housing, I mentioned that a few times. This is the cornerstone of the supportive housing services measure. This is the intervention that is needed to end the homelessness for folks who have long histories of homelessness, otherwise known as chronically homeless. People who have been living without adequate shelter for a year or more, have little or no income, and have one or more disabling conditions. Permanent supportive housing is both affordable housing, so it's either rent assistance or deeply affordable units, like in bond-developed housing, with supportive services, those wraparound services that Mike asked about. So that's what we mean when we say permanent supportive housing, or PSH. We have historically had very little permanent supportive housing. While it is the best intervention for folks who have long histories of homelessness, it's also very expensive. And so it's not been prioritized given our very, very, very few resources in the past. Now we've been able to really dramatically and historically in an unprecedented way expand permanent supportive housing and permanent supportive housing placements by a factor of more than 10. So we're now able to provide permanent supportive housing to over 10 times as many households today than we could 2 years ago, which is a huge success for the county. Housing placement progress into permanent supportive housing, 616 people in 2 years, in an excellent year in a full year, we might have seen 30, 40 placements in permanent supportive housing in a given year. Now we're seeing hundreds. The Regional Long-Term Rent Assistance Program is a voucher, local voucher, funded by the Supportive Housing Services Measure. It's like a Section 8 voucher, but better. It's more flexible. We have landlord incentives. We have great relationships with our landlord partners. We've served 468 people in 2 years with the Regional Long-Term Rent Assistance Program. We've also begun to implement the state funding related to the governor's emergency order related to homelessness. So Clackamas County is receiving funding from the state as part of the emergency order, and we are focusing that funding and our goals related to that funding on the rural part of Clackamas County. Now, everything I've said about the supportive housing services measure has been really limited to the urban growth boundary of the county. As you all know, that's the restriction for the use of the supportive housing services dollars. The taxes raised in that service district, that the tax money has to be spent in that service district. So these SHS programs are not available in Malala or Malino or Desiccato or Sandy. And so what we are doing now is focusing and prioritizing every other dollar available to us that is not SHS money, which is restricted to the metro area, and seeing how we can dedicate it to the rural communities and meet the needs there. So part of that is how we're implementing the emergency order. So the state funding from the governor's order is being directed to serve people experiencing homelessness and housing insecurity in the rural part of Clackamas County. So, oh, I think this is another one where Death by PowerPoint sends me to my notes. So, the statewide goals for the emergency order are to expand statewide shelter beds by 600 to prevent 8,750 households from becoming homeless, to rehouse 1,200 homeless families. That's for the state. The goal set for Clackamas County in response to our plan that we submitted and that was funded by the governor and the legislature were to prevent homelessness for 490 households, rehouse 130 households. And we've also been funded to embark on an outreach program, a street outreach program in the rural part of Clackamas County, which is exciting because that's also historically been missing in rural Clackamas County. So the state funding from the emergency order, here's the goals that I just read off my notes. They were on the slide anyway. Here we go. $6.3 million was received by the county for to be administered by H3S. $1.9 for housing retention, that's rent assistance to prevent homelessness. $2.8 million for rapid rehousing, that'll be used to meet that goal of 130 households being rehoused. And $1 million for outreach, that will fund that rural outreach program. And a portion of that fund will be used internally for administration. So, here we go, $6.3 million. That's our allotment from the emergency order funding. We're also working with a group called Focus Strategies. I just talked with them today to kind of finalize this contract that we'll be conducting over the next 18 months. A lot of outreach and engagement in the rural part of Clackamas County and outside the metro boundary to identify needs, housing needs, and to develop a strategic plan, you know, including based on input from local communities. So that will be kicked off soon, and that will help us guide the strategy for how we repurpose funding that's historically been concentrated in the urban part of Clackamas County. Well, now we have SHS to meet the needs in the urban part of Clackamas County. The rest of the funding is freed up, therefore, to meet needs in rural Clackamas County. So we need to know what are the needs, what is the scale of the needs, who is best on the ground to deliver the needs, and that's the questions that we're going to answer with our consultant working with us imminently. I think that's wrapping me up here. So our plan related to the emergency funding and to the next steps as we move ahead from the SHS measure, focus on the needs in rural communities, you know, build on our existing systems and contracts, but also, you know, identify where we can repurpose dollars that funded programs like in Oregon City historically. We can now kind of swap that funding out, replace it with SHS, and dedicate that funding to meeting needs of rural parts of the county. And I mentioned the rural needs assessment work that is just getting underway. So in sum, we're not on target, we're exceeding our targets across the board. We're not just making progress, we're really looking to the end of chronic homelessness in Clackamas County. That's achievable. That's amazing. That wasn't something I thought was achievable when I took this job 7 years ago. Now that's what I come to work to do. And we're improving the lives of people, everyone in our community. Homelessness impacts all of us. It impacts quality of life. It's a public safety issue. It impacts the businesses. And of course, it's life-threatening to the people who are experiencing lack of access to affordable housing. So we're doing okay. And Commissioner Schrader, I saw that you have your card up.
Yeah, but I'll defer to Mike tonight.
She's built 500 units. By the way, I had 20 years ago when I lived in Multnomah County, I had some experience with the Portland Housing Authority, which 20 years ago entitled to 3,500 units and probably subsidized the rent in another 3,000 units. So it's kind of a big monster, which, by the way, worked better than any other big city in the country. If you know your history, heard of Communities, which was a really big housing place in Chicago, which they dynamited in place. Right? The 500 houses you built You still have title to one? Do you own them?
In some cases, the county does continue to own them, but in many cases, no.
So you built 200 units, $141,000 a piece, and gave them away.
There's some of the programs, the projects are turnkey projects where investment from the county and leverage dollars elsewhere are, you know, used to develop the property. And then the nonprofit or the community development agency is kind of granted title to the property as, you know, to operate it.
So far on the units that you are maintaining, is that the only units that you have title to in Clackamas County?
No. So Clackamas County also is the oldest housing authority in Oregon, and we have the oldest public housing in the state. Some of the public housing in Clackamas County was built in the early 1930s. There are more than 800 units of public housing that are under title to the housing authority, but HUD is having all of the housing authorities throughout the United States, and you mentioned Chicago, that's part of it, undergo a process of disposition. So the federal government is getting out of the business of public housing and asking all of the public housing agencies throughout the United States to do the same. We are divesting from public housing, and we are engaged in a process of disposing of it. And with the proceeds from the disposition, using those funds to redevelop new housing. So that's the path that the county's on. That's where all public housing agencies are. That's the path they're on as well. The federal government has limited the funding to public housing agencies to maintain the properties that are public housing. And so year over year, those costs go up. The funding is not. And so public housing agencies, if they remain in the business of owning public housing, will become insolvent. They will be unable to afford the housing that they own. Yeah, it wasn't my policy. I didn't create that policy. But
you're
that
not,
is
you're not much of a landlord if you can't maintain a piece of property that's paid for 15 or 20% of what the mortgage payment would be. And the Portland Housing Authority is that for years.
Yeah, this
also,
is federal policy.
And they also allow tenants on the left to stay. Screwed up, got evicted from the Portland Housing Authority. Your name is on the list as long as you were alive.
So, Ubahi, could you just share like the 30, 60 year contractual obligation that some of the properties not held by the county, but are held by nonprofits and corporations, how they are obligated to provide those services, building maintenance, and all those services for a number of years?
That's right. Yeah. Thank you, Commissioner Sattis. When bond developed properties are owned by a nonprofit or a community development organization, there are, you know, covenants and contracts that require them to maintain the property in perpetuity, functionally, up to 61 years of affordability. They're on the hook to maintain the affordability of the property and the upkeep and maintenance of the property. Those are costs that they assume. So it's not the gift of an asset. It's not now you own this. You also the owner that becomes now the owner of the property also owns the obligation to maintain the affordability, even if that means that they have to invest in the subsidizing the rents as well as the maintenance for no less than 30 years. But Metro bond funded properties have a longer range, a longer time duration of that affordability covenant. Yes, Mike. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, please.
Okay.
Yes. I just wanted to kind of talk a little bit about the two housing and move forward. I'm thinking of in Malala as well as Estacada. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I visited them recently. That's kind of a tangible outcome of really starting to target and to really get attention to.
I don't know that Home Forward is the developer of those two, but we do work with Home Forward at Tukwila Springs in Gladstone. They provide
But there are folks who are working.
Home First, yeah. Home First. Yes, that's right. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry, Commissioner, but yes, Home First Development. Yes, there are two really exciting affordable housing developments in Malala and Estacada. That Home First Development is working on developing with federal tax credit dollars and partnerships with Las Niñas Cuentan, I think is the name of the organization, or Obos Juntos, I don't remember, but with a local organization that's providing supportive services there. They have a relationship with the school district to make referrals to the housing that's being built. So there is some new affordable housing coming to the rural parts of Clackamas County that's currently underway. So that's exciting. Home First Development, yes. Yes.
Well, I'm curious. I know part of the problem with people that are homeless is some people that are addicted to drugs and some people that are mentally ill. How does that work out with getting a new place to live?
Yeah, that's a great question. So,
are they screened or treated or what?
Yeah. So the mentioned supportive services, that's kind of an all-inclusive term for that as well. So supportive services will include and can include, and for many households or for some households, it will include drug treatment and mental health treatment. So, and that looks like a lot of different things. I mean, during street outreach, someone who is experiencing homelessness and in addiction or suffering from a mental illness, part of that outreach will be connecting them with services in the situation that they're in now. That's a part of what street outreach is doing. And many of our outreach providers are themselves certified drug and alcohol counselors. So that's the work they do as they're walking alongside someone saying, hey, you know, if you want to get clean and get housing, I can hook that up for you. We can do that together. Let's go get some coffee and talk about this. So it can start from street outreach to our transitional housing programs. Again, our transitional housing providers identify folks' needs, maybe drive them to Uber Detox, drive them to an inpatient treatment facility. So behavioral health treatment, recovery oriented services are a component of the whole continuum, and they have to be. For some folks, that's going to be a requisite for success in housing, right?
They have to receive treatment or whatever before they have a home with a 30-year possibility of living in. If they don't get treatment, wouldn't that kind of put them in a situation where maybe they're not
going to
be successful?
Some people, yeah, not everyone is successful in their housing, regardless of whether they're receiving support from Clarence County, right? Some people lose their housing. People have experienced tragedies related to mental health and addiction every day. We don't require engagement in services, and we don't have the ability to require engagement in treatment. That's not a tool in our tool belt, but we can pair supportive services with every one of these programs. And that's what we try to do.
Did you just told us you do not drug test somebody before you give them first?
We don't require engagement in any of the services. It depends on the program. Some of our housing providers do require clean and sober participants to their programs. Yes, Mike.
Three things. First, thank you. Thank you for the work you and your team do. You guys do some amazing stuff with scant resources and channel and a playing field that continues to shift on you. So thank you. It sounds as if a study that came out of California recently suggested what the cause of homelessness, people not knowing the resources that were available to them. It sounds as if street outreach tries to address that component.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, that's we'll come to you, right? That's the street outreach kind of way of doing it, right? Before we had street outreach programs, we did have a coordinated housing access line. So every available resource that someone could access in Clackamas County related to being at risk or experiencing homelessness, that's connected to the coordinated housing access line. If you're living in a tent, Malala, maybe you don't know the phone number and you've never called us. You don't even know the phone number. You've never heard of coordinated housing access. You don't want to call the phone number. We'll still come to you and we'll, hey, are you looking for access to resources? No? Well, I'm going to be back tomorrow with some shoes. I see you're, you know, needing some of those. So develop relationship and trust. Sometimes the first answer is no, leave me alone. But that's not how our outreach stops. So yes, that's correct. We try to make these resources available by going to folks and attempting to deliver them.
And my last question tonight on this topic, I apologize. I was in a meeting last night outside the room of Broke Family. Yes, there is homelessness. Yes, there's illegal camping. Yes, there's illegal trash dumping. The community I was talking with last night, what did I hear? Or Zigzag. They report the sheriff's office. They report the code enforcement. What else could they be doing? What else can we in an unincorporated area nothing more than broke their own greed due to help the people that are in our surroundings.
Well, I mentioned coordinated housing access, right? So there's the CHA, coordinated housing access. I'm assuming that I can get like for follow-up information out to the participants via email as a follow-up. So I can, thank you, Holly. So we can send information with links and phone numbers. That's something that if you're aware of someone in the community that's experiencing homelessness, you want outreach to be connected to them. I can also provide we have an email address for outreach. So if someone is, out in the zigzag and wants to say, hey, I'd like to see some outreach come out and visit this pull off from 26 where I think some folks are kind of camped, you can reach out to us and we can attempt to, send some outreach teams out there.
Is it possible to do such a, thank you, is it possible to do such a thing in coordination with code enforcement?
Yeah.
Or the sheriff's office?
Yeah, that's.
Can I answer it?
Sure.
You can ask her besides me. We don't have homeless people in Boring. We send them to Milwaukee. But we do it politely. There's a Scott Castleman runs a security agency called Corporate Crime Control. And most of his people are retired law enforcement. And by the third time Scott's people show up at an illegal camp, they are gone. But it costs money. But it's also legal. So that doesn't solve the problem, but it makes somebody else bury the problem. And we have a CPO has many of people that work on improvement forms committee called. Anyway, we got a committee and we can go out and visit, and Mr. Castleman kind of trained a couple of people, and
that doesn't solve a problem. I'm seeing it somewhere else. Does not solve a problem.
Well,
the gentleman here is proposing
fine, you
solutions.
You do it your way.
Yeah.
I'm just saying he had a problem out in zigzag with people and the county wasn't helping him. Scott Castleman will move him down with it.
Well, the thing, you have to position them in a kind, gentle way to head towards this housing situation. We don't have it out there. There's nothing out there to help them. So you hope they progress into where they can get the services. The services out there, there's places to park. That's what it's really about.
Can I ask all Jennifer, can you talk a little bit about the neighborhood livability program that the DA has started?
NLP?
Yeah.
Right. Oh, you want to? No, it.
I think that's what gets it somewhat that's helpful in this conversation.
Yeah, so the NLP program was developed by Clackamas County deputies a number of years ago, 2014, right around when we had what we call the zombie homes, the homes that were abandoned because of mortgage collapse and so forth.
Yeah.
And people were occupying those. And so those became one near my house, actually around the corner up on Risley Avenue, was one of the worst ones. And the DA, Bill Stewart and company and deputies worked that case for years. And out of that program came this NLP, which basically they put a lot of resources in it, focused on that particular property and other properties, and basically found ways, unique ways to cure the problem and get the property back up into good ownership. All the situations are unique. It's not necessarily related to homeless. Sometimes it can be. There might be some houseless individuals that are there, yes. Sometimes it's drug related, yes. Sometimes there's theft. We had one out in rural Clackamas County in the Eagle Creek area that was just almost a two-year project, just got closed out here just recently. I went out there and visited that site with the deputies in the neighborhood as well. So it's very successful, urban or rural, and it's just based on complaints. So it's complaint-driven. So once we pass a nuisance ordinance in the county, that was part of the program. So X amount of calls creates a nuisance that draws NLP. deputy, DA, health, housing, youth services, code enforcement, a number of the county agencies all pull together and try to solve those cases for everyone. And, you know, I think even Vahid's department as well gets involved in some of those. So,
yeah.
That help, Commissioner?
Yeah, my understanding is that they've also worked with homeless camps.
Yeah. It's
using that model, which is why I
talked
about it, because it's a really humane way of, again, finding folks and figuring out where they can live.
Yeah, and you're right. It developed out of the relationships from the NLP, the Neighborhood Livability Project, the TA's Office, Sheriff's Department, Local Law Enforcement, and Health, Housing, and Human Services. And you're exactly right. It's been kind of project specific, or when we started during COVID providing transitional housing in hotels and motels, we got all together to manage, you know, calls to the police related to the hotel property, got those down, addressed those concerns, got behavioral health involved and needed and so forth. We received funding from Metro to support garbage cleanups and camp cleanups where people might be camping. And so we did the same thing. We worked with Bill Stewart, the Sheriff's Department, Code Enforcement, and Street Outreach, the Human Services Street Outreach folks, to do all the things, to clean it up, to address crime and livability concerns and prosecute crime if that's what's going on, and connect folks that are camping to housing and services. And so we work together. And it is complaint driven, but it'll pop up. You know, we'll learn about some a collection of RVs or a cul-de-sac somewhere that's becoming an attractive nuisance to a lot of garbage or something like this. It'll get on one of the partners' radar, and we'll kind of pull the team together and deploy. So that is kind of, I think Commissioner Trader's right, Mike. There is kind of like opportunities there for that sort of interdisciplinary collaboration.
And then we're in the city with business leadership. We're in city business leaders, under the leadership of Dan Fowler's looking at Navigation Center, that again houses nonprofits together. So when you find these folks, you can get them there, and there's a one kind of stop. That's in the process right now. I think you've been involved in that too.
Yeah, and that's something that the Homeless Solutions Coalition of Clackamas County is the driving force behind that Navigation Center idea. But yeah, that's okay. The idea there.
So what I'm saying is we are trying to find to get folks, not have them out there be homeless and camping as a nuisance. It's not healthy for the clean, it's not healthy for them either. So we're really trying to figure out, but this is taking public, private, and nonprofit folks working together, the three P's of civil society, public, private, and nonprofit, to solve the problem. And I think we actually got a national award for this as well, if I'm not mistaken, to the National Association of Towns. The Neighborhood Livability. That's my two cents.
Thank you, Commissioner. That's great. Thanks for this incredible conversation. Vicki was making eye contact at me. And so if we could give a round of applause for that. So next on our agenda is the opportunity to hear from our commissioners. Oh, okay. Just briefly. And I'm going to pose this, I'm going to pose it two ways for you. We did have time for informal remarks, if that's something you all would like to do.
Yes.
And then we'd really like the opportunity for people in the room to engage with you on matters. It's like a giant community meeting. You don't have to go to six different ones, so you can just go to one. Isn't that cool? Yes.
Commissioner Marshall, I want to say is this, that I have really enjoyed working with CPOs in this county. And what I've come to find out is that some of the most important organizations we have in the county are CPOs, because they're intimately aware of issues in their areas. And that awareness, when it's brought to county staff and the Board of Commissioners, we're informed on these issues and we can take action on it. As an example, recently I attended a Clark's Highland CPO meeting where they expressed a concern for one of the major roads through their CPO. I talked to the county staff on that. They look into it, and before you know it, it's on a project list So again, we have many, I think 36 CPOs in the county, but not all of them are active. And I see, based on your name tags, the CPOs who are most active are here tonight. But if we can get every CPO up, board members voted in and get them active, I'm telling you, the result for problem solving in county would be fantastic. So thanks again for your work. Keep up the good work and we'll get those problems solved together.
Who would like to go next, commissioners? I didn't have a script for that. Over here? Okay. Chair Smith is the bring on my care.
Well, back about 12 years ago and before, I went to a lot of CPO meetings. I'll stand up. My workload has increased tremendously, so don't have the free time to go out there, but I do take invitations, and thank you, Valerie, for inviting me. I'll be at their CPO tomorrow night. So if you want any of us to come out to your CPO, call our staff, and we'll be out there. And Mark's done a lot of outreach at CPOs, and I think that's good for all of us to do. A few words. I talk about my workload primarily today, almost every day. It's been this tolling issue. I love these opportunities to learn. I think our staff have shared that with you. If you've got something on your mind that you want to talk about, this is the best time. So I don't want to spend a lot of time talking to you. I really want to hear from you. I'll just give you a brief update on tolling. It's very dynamic. What I mean by that, it's changing every day. We do not feel, I used to have a very, I thought, I was very proud of my relationship with ODOT and work that ODOT did. I'll tell you, the last few years, they are over their skis, in my opinion, on this tolling issue. They're doing something that's not only they've never done before, but they're also doing something that's never been done anywhere in the country. So having layered tolling, what I mean by that is tolling for bridges the old way, but they modified that. They found a different way. And then layered on top of that was called RDP, which is congestion pricing, essentially, where they toll at a variable rate. So it's messed up. I was expecting today or the end of this week a pile of documents about that high level data. We've been asking for the data for over 2 years. And we were told that on July 1st, or this week, by the end of this week, we'd have a pile of data. And I was so disappointed. I got 40 some odd pages out of what I thought was data. And none of it's data. It's just narrative. So very disappointing. I've been working on that pretty intensely. We worked with the region. I'll tell you that virtually every city in the urban Clackamas County or urban metro area is involved in this in a strong way, plus our rural cities as well. So because it impacts the urban area, that's primarily where all the tolling is going to happen. We're heavily involved. So we are partnering with Portland, Washington County, Multnomah County, virtually every city. So it's a once in a lifetime opportunity where the relationships with all the jurisdictions are actually strong and good, and we're communicating. Our staff are doing a fabulous job, not just the staff of Clackamas County, but the staff of all these agencies are working together. So I'm happy to take any questions. I really don't want to talk at you. I really want to listen to what y'all have in mind. Mike.
I don't know if this is true, but I was told this by an ODOT employee. They cannot use gas tax money to pay workers. But on the tolling, there is nothing in the regulations that will prevent them from using that tolling money to make their first payment, which right now is, by the way, overhead for state employees is 100% payroll. I don't know how many of you people run businesses, but for those of you who do, you know that's an unsustainable amount. Can they use the tolling money to pay first?
I'll look into that. But that's never, that level of detail has never really been asked because we haven't even seen anything on tolling or spark data. So,
well, it's kind of amazing what government employees will tell you when nobody else is listening.
Oh, look at that. Anyone else?
We are going to have time to ask questions after we move
on. I'll pass the mic on.
Oh, thank you, Commissioner Savas.
Thank you, Commissioner Savas. My name is Ben West. I'm the new kid on the block. I have just about to hit 7 months on the job representing all of you guys. It's a great honor. This is my first dinner with you guys like this, you folks. So thank you for coming out. Some of you, it's a big county, and some of you guys came a really long way. So I appreciate you guys doing that. We have different people representing vastly different parts of the county, all the way from people more urban to more rural. So thank you so much. I don't know what you guys know about me. I'm a nurse by trade. I still work at OHSU in cardiology just a couple days a month. I'm also a brand new baby naval officer for the United States Navy. I just took the oath to serve our country in the United States Naval Reserves last month at Camp Withicum here in Clackamas County. So that's and I'll be doing that weekend work in a couple weeks a year. I'm doing that nursing work also, and then I work full-time for all of you guys. I'm told that I'm not allowed to get a fourth job, so I'll leave it at that. One of the reasons why I ran to be a Clackamas County Commissioner is really influenced by me being a nurse. I love policy and public service, but how could I utilize my nursing skills the best? You know, I served as a Wilsonville City Councilor. I've been a local guy in all of my service, but as Wilsonville City Councilor, I didn't get to use technically really a lot of my nursing skills and knowledge around public health and health policy. And I went to grad school for in nursing and health policy. But as a county commissioner, I get to do some of this, as you've heard the heat and much of the conversation tonight, be focused on public health and housing and human services. And it's such a great joy for me to be able to bring those talents and my unique perspective into that sphere. I'm so proud, at least within the last 7 months, what this county has accomplished. I almost feel like the great numbers that he gave us is just scratching the surface on so many different levels. And we're as far as government goes, we're moving pretty quick here and trying to be bold and aggressive in how we deal with chronic and persistent crises that we're all dealing with. One thing that stood out to me just from a practical level and as an RN was the aggressive outreach. Why are we the only county to see trending numbers downwards as others are stagnant or seeing increases? Why? We don't have the same resources or necessarily the same dollars. Our staff may not be as big, but why are we having significant better outcomes? One of those reasons is because the UNS team do such a good job in that robust outreach on the streets. The heat in the most humane way, his team and our and loved one and father's heart, they don't allow those struggling with homelessness for whatever reason is the causation to feel comfortable stagnated in that position. It's hard to get somebody in that state to desire change and to shift towards change, but how do we get them and nudge them, that inertia to get going towards change? And it's like Mahid said, he didn't go quite into it, but it was maybe they're not receptive, but I'm going to see them again tomorrow. Here's a pair of shoes because you have no shoes. I'm going to meet your human need. And you're still maybe grumpy with me that I'm going to be here again tomorrow. What happens is by the 30th time that Mahid is at their camp's a little neater because they know the heat is coming. It's just a little cleaner. It's just a little contemplation towards change. And as the team continues to be aggressive and not allow people to live unseen, we start to see change happen. And I think that is the work ethic and the determination of our staff and of this county to not afraid to be innovative, creative, and to be honest about what is really causing homelessness. One of the things, I'll pass the mic after this, but one of the things I am really proud of, even though people say government resolutions aren't that exciting, Commissioner, they do them all the time, and generally they're not worth the paper they're written on, but our recovery-oriented systems of care resolution was a new worldview that was not being done and was not being adhered to anywhere else in the metro area. It was so good that a number of other cities and counties have also passed the exact same resolution because we want answers to homelessness, addiction, and mental health issues. And it talks about the pillars of what recovery means, that everybody gets clean and vibrant spaces and are due to that. But we also need to meet the real need, and those that are ready for treatment and care can get it. And we're going to deal with the gaps in that care in a very targeted way. So that's exciting. I'm excited that we're doing those things in Clackamas County. That's one of the things I'm passionate about, but we're doing a lot of great things. and you'll hear a little bit from all of us about the things that we're focused on. But if you have any questions regarding those efforts that we're doing, I'd be more than happy to answer them later. Martha, are you next or Shoal?
Thank you, Commissioner West. I know a lot of people in the room are really excited to meet you. So thank you for being here. Who? Kirsten?
Martha, you want to go ahead? Sure.
I have the mic. Well, welcome everybody. I love CPOs as well, and I will encourage you to become a Hamilton Village because I was here when we made that model, and it's kind of like being a community planning organization on steroids. So colleagues, don't get mad at me for saying, hey, you can even up the ante with citizen participation, am I right? Stafford Hamlet, Creek Hamlet. So yeah, I've been here a while. I'm still happy that people have enough faith in me as a commissioner that I have been able to serve here for a while. I'd like to address a few things that Ben said. Yeah, we're going to be looking at the recovery model. We're going to be taking a look at some models that are available in Texas together to see how they do it, how they do it right there. And I did look up what the recovery model was because I'm not as eloquent as you, Ben, but it includes the principles of hope, dignity, self-determination, and responsibility. And these are essentially the key components in treating people with mental health and addiction problems through this model. So it is a bit of an opportunity for us to really attempt to get recovery, medical recovery, as well as addiction recovery and better health outcomes for the citizens of our county. And I feel very fortunate that you and I are going to have an opportunity to work on that together. Another issue I've been working on is I've been essentially running around the county visiting all of our major businesses. So far, I have visited Bigger, Cisco, let's see, Precision Cast Parts, Daimler, Siemens, Clear. These are some of our larger traded sector businesses. So they not only employ local people, a lot of them are the larger businesses, they're international and actually do things here that help our county. One of the conversations that has come up, which is interesting to me, I do serve as your workforce representative, is childcare. Childcare, we have a huge childcare desert in this county. We have a map of the deserts. So tomorrow morning with our workforce board at Clackamas Community College at 8:30, we're going to be having a conversation about what we call the childcare collaborative, Clackamas Childcare Collaborative. What does it mean to have childcare? Well, what we're looking at, we've invited Daimler, we've invited Siemens, we've invited Willamette View, we've invited all the larger traded sector folks that have the dollars to actually have childcare on campus. And what we're really going to talk about is return on investment for them. Do they become an employer of choice? Do their workers stay, you know, in a more productive because they don't have to worry about that? And we're going to try and start looking at models. How can we do that with some of our smaller to medium-sized businesses or under childcare hubs or things we can do? And I will tell you right here now, one of the reasons I got involved with is because I know we're a tax-averse county. And I know that something like that was floated out, that wouldn't work. What we have to be doing is looking at the businesses that are already doing this, see what models they use, and see how we can encourage people in order to make sure that we have facilities. One of the things I found out today from Margaret Salazar, I talked to her today. She's the regional administrator of Northwest Alaska, Idaho, Oregon, and Washington. And Housing and Human Development, actually HUD, in August is going to be announcing opportunities for dollars for child care facilities. So what will that look like for us? How can we expand? But how can we expand looking at it from a business model? So there's prosperity for the workers who need the childcare to get to work, and prosperity for the businesses so they get the workforce that they need. And then the pre-K through 12 kind of childcare issues that allow people to stay in the workforce, not to worry about their kids. What's the win-win for everybody? So it's a new way of looking at it, trying to look at it from a business model, and I'll let you know if it hopefully it'll work really well. Keep your fingers crossed. Thank you. And any questions about that, let me know.
Thank you, everyone. I think Clackamas County is one of the most unique counties. So, you know, the governors have told me Clackamas County is an exact microcosm of the entire state. We have over 1.5 million acres, 16 cities, lots of agriculture, lots of cities. We have the richest community in the state of Oregon. We have some of the poorest. So when you go out into communities and visit, everybody's needs are different. And we try to listen to people and move forward. We talked a lot about housing and homelessness, but you may have heard the Board of County Commissioners on this May are going to refer two questions to the citizens regarding Measure 110 and the decriminalization of very harmful and illicit drugs, which a lot of us think the Board of County Commissioners is one of the biggest causes of homelessness in the county. They decriminalized heroin, all the opioids, methamphetamine, to the point that it's open air drug addiction and the police cannot arrest them. That is not right. I was on a phone call with Mayor Wheeler today. He was all excited about putting an ordinance out in his city, and he's kind of dialed that back because of a new House bill that came that says 1 gram of fentanyl is allowed. It is allowed. Beyond that, he thinks that's going to fix it. I made some calls to the district attorney, our county council. It's not so much. So we're going to continue on fighting that for whatever we can do in Clackamas County to stop that. Mental illness is also a problem. But yeah, if I was living on the street for a amount of time, I'd have mental illness too. If I was taking illicit drugs that are harmful to you, I would have mental illness too. But I want to mention one other thing. A precursor to a homelessness is an economic factor. I got a call into the office last fall from a woman. Her name was Linda. And her sister was married. Her husband died. They lost the home. Couldn't afford to keep it anymore. So she says, come live with, park your RV on my backyard here. Live in my RV for a while. Well, a neighbor didn't like it, complained to Clackamas County, called the commission office, and I took the call. And I says, well, why not? You're taking care of her. At least she's not on the street. So I went down to our planning department and said, planners, you need to fix this. You need to allow this, right? So I thought it was a county problem. No, it turns out it was a state land use law that prohibits the one RV on a piece of property in unincorporated Clackamas County. So I went to my friend in the legislature, Senator Cedric Hayden, and I says, will you drop a bill for me that says, one RV is allowed on a piece of property that already has a home for a relative or a friend or a neighbor to live in, and that keeps them from becoming homeless. And through back and forth, you know, we have a few restrictions on it, but it's totally permissive. Counties don't have to adopt it if we don't want to, but in Clackamas County, we will adopt it. It passed the Senate, it passed the House, regardless of the walkout. It's on its way, it's sitting on the governor's desk, and I expect she will sign it. And then we call it affectionately the RV bill, Senate Bill 1013, that will put the homeless situation into the hands of the people who care the most and want to do something about it, and it's not costing you one dime. So that's how we need to look at some of these situations. There's many exciting things going on. Clackamas County passed the largest public safety budget in the history of Clackamas County. $74 million was given to the sheriff's office to keep Portland crime out of Clackamas County. And we are very serious about that. We have an active district attorney's office. We have putting more patrols on the streets. Going forward with that, as you can see, we have a courthouse over here that we're constructing to allow for more judges, because based on our population, we don't have enough judges in Clackamas County because we have no place to put them. So therefore, we cannot convict criminals because they can't get to court. So we're working on that as well. Our budget is very solid. If Gary Schmidt was here, he would tell you it's very solid. It's very concrete. And the biggest challenge we had in the budget was to eliminate wasteful spending, redundancies. The redundancies is one program that's funded by different sources to identify general fund budget money versus other fund budgets money, And I think this is the deepest dive that has ever happened in the history of the Clackamas County budget, quite possibly any county budget, because this courthouse over here that will be open in May of 25 may be the last large courthouse built in the state of Oregon. We were able to do that because of a 50% match from the state of Oregon. And with inflation, the price went up, so we went back down to the legislature this year and asked for the remaining balance to pay for it. They allocated us an additional $30 million to help pay for the inflationary cost overruns. Thank you very much. We are very grateful to that. However, the total allocation for courthouses across the state of Oregon is only $60 million, and we received half of that. So the future of courthouses is going to be, I think it's teetering because we have a new legislature and they look at public safety being different than what some of us do. But we're working on that. And again, we were able to do the RV bill because one of the people like you called us up and said, hey, this is a problem. Yes, we do listen. We do love hearing from you. And we may not always return the call as fast as you think because we're trying to figure out the problem. Gee, is this really true? What do we do about it? Sometimes it's within our own power to do something, but a lot of times it's not. But I want to thank you all for being here tonight. We do appreciate you. You are the salt of the earth people. You're in many ways just like us in our own communities. We have neighbors. We live in neighborhoods, just same neighborhoods that you have. I am very appreciative of everybody coming tonight. And Holly,
yes,
am I turning it over to you now?
I think we're turning it over to our community guests for questions. Thank you, Chair Smith.
Holly.
Yes.
I've got a question here.
Oh, well, hello. Yes, hello. Okay, wait, I'm coming over here. Okay. I'm going to hold the microphone.
But I'm not trusted. How about a microphone?
Okay.
Thank you very much, Holly. I'd like to ask a question about the upcoming fire season. I think we have a fire season which is at least a month ahead of where it was three years ago. I'm deeply worried about it. I know that many of the CPOs, which represent at least 50% of the county, are petrified of what may happen this year. And I'd like to ask the commissioners or anybody from the county one simple question. Are we ready?
Well, I'll say this. I think we're more ready than we were at the firestorm of September of 2020. And I've been on the phone a lot with the governor. So we go from September 2020, and then the next summer, we actually had 30 fires in Clackamas County. I don't know if you're aware of that. And you didn't hear about them because the governor beefed up her plans and says, oh my gosh, I better do something. Oh, really? And so they were able to get resources there sooner and put them out earlier. Since then, the Oregon House, and I don't remember all the bills, Chris Lyon, you're here, they did a lot of work on fire prevention and fire resources, and they're upping them. So after the Martha Schrader and I, we toured the fire-stricken areas about 2 weeks after the fires. And we traveled all through Malala, Estacada, and South. And we were tramping through the places, and it was still smoldering, and it was still smoking. But because of the intense volunteer organization of the people from Estacada and Malala, saved lives in Clackamas County. And the one complaint we heard of is we didn't know. Nobody told us. Nobody told us. And that has stuck with Martha and I deep in our hearts. So what we have done in Clackamas County, there's a registry you go onto your cell phone. What's the name of that, Sue? Anyway, you get emergency alerts. It's public alerts, but you go online and you register your cell phone and you get alerts. And I got an alert, several months ago to do that. And with that, I had this idea of establishing an emergency preparedness council. And we had a lot of volunteers. We had 75 people apply for 25 positions. And what they have been doing is the people on that have been going out and talking to CP organizations like yourself to implement your own preparedness. Because I will say this, do not depend on your government because they won't be there when you need them the most. you have to do some work yourself in defensible spaces. They have enough supplies so they're for 2 weeks. Have your own water. Try to, if you can afford it, your own electricity or an own heating source. And if you live alone, don't live with your neighbor. You know, so it, and it's up to each people in your own community to go door knocking in a time of great emergency. We had the ice storm. We declared an emergency. I talked to Governor Brown. He says, we're going to need National Guard in. Will you bring in the National Guard so you can go out to the deep communities and make sure those people literally are still alive because they were without power for almost 2 weeks and it was very cold. So whereas some may think it was a failure in 2020, we have learned it from it. In Clackamas County, we're blessed. Nobody died. However, our dear sister county to the south, Marion County, was not so lucky. And so it's on, we are trying to do as much as we possibly can. And we are beefing up. Daniel 9 hours ahead of emergency management division here in Clackamas County. And they are implementing programs. And we're doing the best we can. And I do think we are in a better place. We are in a better place, but each person needs to be responsible. Don't set a fire. Don't start a fire. Don't shoot the fireworks. Don't do this. Don't do that. And just be mindful of your surroundings. This winter, we had a lot of rain. In the spring, we had a lot of rain. And that makes, while everything is beautiful green now, it makes for more fuel. So the bad thing about rain, it makes for more fuel and things are more combustible. So thank you for your question. I appreciate it. Maybe you have a suggestion that we can give.
Well, I do have a little follow-up. First of all, you have a gentleman by the name of Daniel Niebuhr.
Daniel Niebuhr.
Niebuhr. I think he's awesome. I had the opportunity to speak to him at some length at one of the PGE presentations, and I really think he's getting his act together, particularly on evacuations, which was really a bit of a mess last time around. His attitude to that is, hey, let's not take half the county and evacuate them at the same time. Why don't we take small groups of people and evacuate them, and then 26 and Redland and all the rest of it can take them? So I was very, very impressed by him. I do think he's got to act together, and it was a good move to bring him on to the team. The thing that worries me most of all, and the thing that is so different from the last time, are the bad power outages. And PGE are doing an enormous amount of work at the moment, particularly with their AI cameras, which can detect fires, particularly in the Mount Hood forest area. But when they do these power outages, that means that the rural communities, which are all on wells, have no water. Mm-hmm. I did know that you did mention have water. Well, I think we would love to have water, but it takes quite a lot of generating power to work these wells. So we don't have water. We don't have the node sites for internet. A lot of rural Clackamas County is a dead zone for cell phones. Mm-hmm. And your phones aren't going to work because the node sites are not being powered. So what happens when they do these planned power outages is you've got 50% of the county, potentially, which has no communications. They won't have a clue what's happening. And I just think it's a problem.
Well, I don't disagree with you. And I have been in conversations with the CEO of the General Electric, Maria Pope, and says, what are you doing? You had a scheduled power outage, for instance, in South Clackamas County, when they didn't receive any wind. And they had relied on the information from their meteorologist. And I says, you know what, weathermen really aren't that accurate, weather people, women too. Didn't mean to pick on the men in here. And I said, well, I have an idea for you. Why don't you can buy your home weather station. You can measure your weather, you can do this. It says, on the top of your power poles, instead of waiting for a meteorologist to tell you think there's gonna have a big old event, stick a weather device on top of the power poles, and it can measure for you temperature, humidity, and when, and you will know in real time if your area needs to shut off that power. And they have built a brand new IOC center in Tualatin that is state of art center for tracking. Tracks everything all over the Western United States. I mean, it's like boarding a Starship Enterprise deck. It's so technical. And I've noticed they have been implementing some of those in my drive into work. I, too, live in the country on a well. I live in an area that does not have cell phone capability. And one of the goals of the Emergency Preparedness Committee is to contact the cell phone companies and say, make sure you have enough propane or gasoline to power that cell tower in the outages, because the county has no authority to tell the cell phone companies what to do. As a matter of fact, the PUC, the Public Utility Commission, does not regulate cell phone towers in Oregon either, as we learned. So it's up to us to encourage the cell companies to make sure they can power their cell phones. And unfortunately, I think we've all grown a little bit complacent and relying too much on technology and our way of life. And maybe we're going to have to rely on our own initiative. If we can't have a well, we need to learn how to store our water. We need to learn how to preserve food and be able to have a week or two worth of supply on hand. And that's what Daniel Neibauer will tell you. And yes, we enjoy Daniel very much. Thank you for that.
Judy, can I add a couple things? I think
are yes. You bet, Paul.
So I just want to add, Judy did mention defensible space, and you can actually contact your fire districts. They are really attuned to this more than ever. So you get information from them. Some of them will actually come out and, you know, to your site, not all. And I do know that they have doubled down. Also, we are doing a town hall, I believe, on this issue, just to draw attention to make people aware how they can harden their properties. I just talked to a friend of mine in South Clackamas County, near Silverton, just within Clackamas County, but out towards Silverton. And he just bought a pump and a generator and all the things to keep. So he's got fire protection for his home, and he's got a creek nearby he can pull out of. So just going to throw that out there, that it's really up to us to really look at our own properties. Even insurance companies will actually assist as well. So,
and if I might add one more thing to that, that on Mr. Slatford's question about how ready are we? One thing I recommend that each CPO does is look at the Clackamas.us website. Clackamas.us/DM/EOP, that's Disaster Management Emergency Operation Plan. In that emergency operation plan, you'll find out about evacuation centers, evacuation routes, some of the procedures that will be used in the case of a disaster. And then share that with your communities to help them get ready. One of the most important things that everybody can do now is get registered for the public alert system, so you can get a phone call, you can get a VoIP over internet, you can get an email to let you know what the situation is on any given disaster and information about evacuations, et cetera. That's how you get prepared.
Yeah, one of the things I know, Judy, we're going to have an evacuation, I think, preliminary plan ready in June, and it's going to be released. So that's the time when the community planning organizations need a hold of that, look at it, give us feedback. And I think that's when it's your job to do the review that we're going to need to do from the community, so you can pre-plan and practice. Because a lot of it is just getting out on your own. And yes, Judy's right. I've never seen anything like that before. The amount of destruction and distress people in. Ben, you want to?
Yeah, I can. I'll piggyback on that. When I was a Wilsonville City Councilor, I mean, we were a city here dealing with this along with the county. And, you know, we had Charbonneau during the ice storm was specifically isolated. All of our power in Wilsonville is underground. The city made sure that there were no overhead power lines to try to prevent situations like this from happening. But Charbonneau, 55 and older community, primarily senior community, lost all their power, their cell phones went out of work, and they were isolated on the other side of the river. And so that's just another tragic event, not just the fire, but the ice storms. I'm sure, what did you say? We, in Clackamas County, the last year or two, have four states of emergency, like back to back to back to back. And so that's a, that puts a lot of pressure on local communities. One thing that we focused on Wilsonville was like how, on a very local level, and you guys have CPOs or even more granular than that, how can we get our neighbors ready and to model behavior that helps get your neighbor ready? So we did a whole program in Wilsonville where we would, as a city, promote and teach and hold meetings about how do you just like put together an emergency kit that gets you through that initial period, right? And how maybe you do it in a fun way with your neighbor and work with one another, with maybe even a block within your neighborhood or maybe within your CPO or some group like that to take that and that local responsibility to get ready. And then one thing that might go unnoticed today, but is applicable, it's on our consent agenda, I believe. The state has issued money for those that lost their property due to fire, how to rebuild their property, but to do with more resilient products, products that are going to make your property more defensible and not and be less likely to be burnt to the ground. And so we passed funds through, and we're looking to do, that was on our consent agenda. I think we'll be voting on this on Thursday, for additional funds for people that are in these specific zones to help harden their properties and make it less likely for them to burn to the ground and be very mindful in how we rebuild to make those communities just a little bit stronger even from an infrastructure standpoint.
Yes, Mike.
I think everybody in the room should know something about the town of Estacada and Oregon's not Estacada, but during the 2 weeks that the city of Estacada was in danger of being destroyed, I was into the town every day. The reason I was in the town every day is the Shell station never closed and they had to have food. So I drove out there every day with a big bag of Mickey D's. Pretty miserable. Two-thirds of the people in Estacada were gone. Most of the time you could only see about 150 feet. The professional fire departments abandoned the city of Estacada, but some of the Portland firemen that lived in the area came into Estacada and told them what was going on. Non-professional contractors and truckers and loggers went out and put the fire out. Boring water never tried to account for the amount of water that was picked up in boring. The fire hydrants at the police station out in back were just left open, and contractors came in with the big tanks. But they saved the city of Estacada. And I don't think that was ever recognized or cost that company that has that Shell station in Estacada a little bit of money to stay open 24/7. For 14 days, when the people that were coming in were the guys that didn't have power and were coming in with 5 gallon cans to run their generators and keep the pumps running, and they were cutting down everything. And that's what stopped it. Bulldozers and trackers put the fire out, not some guy with a little hose.
Thank you for sharing that story. Any other questions?
I'd like to also point out, as part of that, that the governor sat back, watching it happen, and didn't jump in. That was a disgrace.
Disgrace. Right.
But people are self-sufficient, and they want it. Although it doesn't look like it out there, like it was on.
I'm going to go over here, right? And then I'll come back to this. We haven't heard from this side of the table, so let's...
Mine's still working, so.
Thank you so much. So the question I have tonight is, I'm totally we know that it's been postponed for a couple of years until 2026, but there's no guarantee that that's going to continue. So how will the county prioritize transportation improvements to address local road impacts for diversion traffic? Is there a plan to have strategic planning moving forward with that?
Spot commissioner, I think so. That's a great question. It's something that I don't want to get, I'm not going to get too technical, but you cannot spend dollars on transportation projects unless it's in the transportation system plan. All the transportation system plans for every city and county in the region have not anticipated or have the data to enter projects that would react or reduce the impacts of tolling. So we haven't had, number one, the data to do it. And this actually came up Monday at a regional meeting about that. And yet ODOT is saying, give us your project list. And we have no data to back it up. So it's not defensible. The engineers are saying, technically, it won't meet anything. It's not in the transportation plans. And we're not even sure, frankly, because ODOT hasn't given us the data, exactly where they're going to toll or how they're going to toll or what the rates are going to be, because the rates, the dollar rate, will affect how much people get off the freeway or avoid the freeway. And we know that it's dollar cent sensitive. So that's really on our, that's a target. We're working with the cities. West Lynn and Oregon City are probably going to be the most impacted. And then everything outwards from there is going to be, see some impact. So does that get to your question?
Yeah.
I wish I could give you some better news.
No, that's okay.
And by the way, there's no money to build a damn thing, even though we did identify a project. And we're asking ODOT for the money, and they're saying, oh, we're broke. And but if we raise the rate higher, we can get money for projects. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that, frankly, I think the overhead of that tolling project is going to be so high that it doesn't really net any income or any enough money to float this whole project, period. So, again, they're doing something that's never been done in the state of Oregon, never been done in the country at this level. Yes, ma'am.
Why is ODA only tolling right there, where every place else in the country, they toll the entire road? Everybody has to pay. It's not just people in Clackamas County that use that bridge.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I know, but yes. What gives them the right? Did somebody say, if you want to have a project, you have to toll right there? And that's it?
Yeah, well, there's a federal rule or law that allows tolling on, you know, bridges. Okay. Bridges, for example, right? Okay. The old traditional way that's been around for decades, if not over 100 years, right? So the interstate bridge, once when they first built it, was tolled, right? So there's an example of a toll. They built the bridge, they paid the bond, and then the toll went away. That's the old way. Now what they're proposing is tolling, but in perpetuity. Not just tolling. The law says you can toll for a new lane on a bridge or a road. But they change that so you can apply for what's called VPPP. I won't get technical, but it means that they can actually toll all the lanes and in perpetuity, not to pay a bond off.
Oh, yeah.
So it's expanded. So they're going to start with the bridge. Right now, the plan, the Oregon Transportation Commission meets tomorrow. They're going to talk about whether or not they just toll the bridge or they toll the remaining 6 miles. And then they want to layer on a larger plan in the next year or two called RMPP, which will toll all of Interstate 205 and all I-5 between Wilsonville to the state line. So that's what's proposed right now.
To get the money now.
From little acorns, oak trees grow.
Well, okay, but you go back east, you know, or from Chicago area even, the toll roads, people live with them. You get on, you pay when you get off. Simple. And I mean, it's the whole road that is tolled. Every exit is tolled.
Well, not all roads.
Not all roads.
Not all roads.
It's a highway.
Yeah, it's some. There's as you know, there's turnpikes and there's other means where they toll certain assets for certain reasons.
Yeah, but according to some of the documentation that I've seen, the amount that they want to toll is ridiculous. You know, and it is graduating.
Yep.
I mean, the George Washington Bridge is astronomical to go over, but it's only one way, you know, so you pick which way you want to go. But the amount that they want to charge for the Abernathy Bridge and the one in Stafford seems a little ridiculous for this area.
Yeah, ODOT has said that tolling is going to come to the entire state. So it's going to start here. It's going to start in Clackamas County. Congratulations. And then it's going to go out through the whole state. So. Just be aware, that's what they actually publicly stated.
Can I add another really quick?
Isn't that the birthplace of Oregon? So, like,
I want to, I think this is
important to tolling discussion is it's not really a pause, right? And am I right? ODOT won't even call it a pause. They're full steam ahead in implementation, and there's it may be a little bit later down the road, but the work is still being done to toll Clackamas County. We even got that little concession from the governor was needs to be pointed out. It was the dog in us, the fight in us in Clackamas County and our 16 cities unified in a very cohesive and galvanized way that got the legislature, the governor's attention enough to get that movement. So we're not done fighting in addressing this. It's I think I've said this over and over again. It's the largest threat at Clackamas County in a generation or more. The tolling thing. It will devastate local communities, navigability, people's ability to get their kids to and from school, someone able to get to their doctor's appointment. It will make us less business friendly, will economically damage us, and it will be an unbearable burden on working families, especially those that can afford it the least amount. There is no real plan here for this scheme. I'm proud that the Board of County Commissioners working with the cities is doing some very innovative stuff. That 40-page document that came out that was very technical and detailed and the response to the environmental assessment that was really the meat and the technical support that our legislators needed in Clackamas County to try to bring this forward is now the best minds in Congress and in the House of Representatives that work on transportation are using that very document to try to support us today. I got word from Congressman Lori Chavez-Dreamer's office that they're pulling the brightest transportation minds out of the federal government to really, and they're using and looking at that document that your county worked for. Now ODOT, they gave us an EA. The EA was how many pages?
2,000
page bureaucratic gobbledygook. I mean, it was like this big, thick monster. We had 60 days that no layperson could actually get through it. We had 60 days given to us to respond to it. With the response, we went to ODOT and said, hey, listen, please just give us 30 more days. We need 90. It's not a big ask. Please, it's 2,000 pages. We need to be able to advocate for our local communities. ODOT said, no, we're not going to give it to you. Your county commissioners, working with our Department of Transportation, the people that work in this building, worked overtime, hired outside support, got experts in the room, made it a top priority. We produced that 40-page document. It is why the governor did what she did. It is what is being looked at in the federal government right now. The city of West Lynn was an amazing partner in this. The city of Oregon City here was an amazing partner in this. Looking at other, many of the other cities here in Clackamas County are very unified in this effort to fight for the local families and stop this tolling scheme. But it's not over. I think sometimes it's not a coincidence that 2026 is right after when this is done, it's right after an election season. And a lot of politicians who maybe supported tolling early on are now seeing it's not so popular in Clackamas County are using this scheme to lull people to sleep. But we got to stay active in our communities to try to stop this effort, tolling. And in Clackamas County is the spearhead. And it's interesting. We couldn't implement it. We couldn't necessarily say yes or no to it. We're a local government. But we put on our punching gloves and we're throwing haymakers to try to fight for our local community. And we're the ones that actually got any movement on this issue against a giant bureaucratic behemoth and a legislature that's not even interested in having a hearing. If you want to bother a state legislator, ask McLean out of Washington County, who's not going to be affected by it. So she won't even allow a hearing on tolling in Salem now that session's over. So she was just stonewalling every opportunity for your voices to be heard and your neighbor's voices to be heard in Salem on this important issue. So we have a fight on our hand. We're here to do it. But what movement we have happened and what leadership has happened at the local level.
The pause is only a pause on collection. They are full steam ahead on implementation.
Thank you. I think this microphone doesn't work.
I don't. This one is.
They're kind of sensitive.
They're touching.
No, you haven't got your time to go.
Apparently, but I'm a cat for jokes. Thank you all. We're going to wrap up this evening. I want to introduce
Sue Hilbeck, who is the Director of Public Government Affairs here at the county, and give our just closing remarks. And he's also my boss. put some context into things. Good luck.
Thank you.
That works.
Thank you, Molly. Does that work at all?
No.
Well, I'm not sure I really need it. How about that?
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for the time tonight, but more importantly, for the hours that you're spending out on the front lines. You are our frontline partners, and we view you as partners, and we want to hear from you. And somebody said tonight, well, I'm the thorn in your side. No, you're the spark that we need to hear from so that we can move good public policy at the county level. So thank you for being here. Thank you to Mahid for his presentation. I want to thank the PGA team, Holly, Stacy, Chris, and I want to thank Tony for supporting us tonight. Also mark August 1st on your calendar. That's when we are anticipating the town hall that the BCC will be holding about wildfire preparation, and Daniel's going to speak at that, so you'll get more information, and that's our tentative date. And we look forward to next time, but don't wait for this event. Please pick up the phone and call us. Please use your network and your neighbors to bring forward the issues we need to hear about. That's what we're here for. And we're really honored that you came tonight and spent this time with us. So safe travels home. Until next time. Thank you.
Thank you. No, you guys.